I heard yesterday from my father-in-law. It was really nice. I had this very rare. My father doesn't come to visit me very often. Every few years, I have the honor of. So my shver came to visit me last night, and he told me something very interesting. He just said it on the side. He told me something I thought it was really nice. You should ask him what we're learning in Dirshu. So then he was telling me. So we learned about. I told him about changing our minhagim and everything, because we touched on that a few simonim ago. He was telling me something interesting. He remembers he was telling me that he lived for, you know, he was for many years, he davened in the, for many for decades, he davened in the Adas in Stamford Hill, the Ekisha Shul. He said they were always been extremely, extremely rigid about the other one, the older Adas. Yeah. Very rigid about minhagim and tunes and everything, very, very rigid and very, very yekish and very... He said there's a way of one particular niggun that changed. And he tells me that there was... Pardon?
How is that possible?
Yeah, so how is that possible? And that's exactly the story. So he said there was one niggun, which is the Shir Hamalois on Moitzoy Shabbos. So the story goes like this. In Frankfurt am Main... In Germany, there was one particular niggun that used to sing Shir Hamalos on Motzei Shabbos. And the reason for that was because people used to go; they were rushing on Motzei Shabbos straight to go to the office to see the post that came. So they rushed on Motzei Shabbos to see the post. They want to rush out to the post. So the Abonim in Frankfurt am Main said, "Okay, the only way to keep them there on Motzei Shabbos a bit longer is if we make a nice tune. People were much more inclined to, you know, they had a lot more culture. So they, if a nice tune would keep people, so they had a tune which wasn't composed, especially for the Shir Hamalos in Motzei Shabbos. I don't know if it's that tune or not. I don't know. I'm not musical, so I wouldn't."
So
straight after Maiv, yeah. I'm not sure. He actually did sing to me the tune, and I forgot. Leaving at the tune is the point being before Maiv, yeah. But I'm not sure if they sang it before or after Maiv. My shver couldn't remember. So and that was a Frankfurt am Main tune, which was very beautiful and very. They composed that tune specifically for the Motzei Shabbos Maiv. Now what happened was. That during the, this was a Frankfurt am Main in Germany, they used to sing this. In the 1930s, Moreno Rosenheim, Jakob Rosenheim, was one of the heads of the Aguda, very German, very Yekish, leader of the Aguda. He moved in the 1930s from Germany to London. And when he moved, it was a very tragic, it was very difficult for him. He felt very disorientated and was very lost, and he was a new world. He had in Germany everything, and he moved, he escaped from Germany to go to London. But it was a very difficult shift and very difficult transition for him. And he became from that very famous, in his 60s already, from a very prominent person, he became suddenly he had lost pretty much everything. And he davened in Queen Elizabeth in the Adas, and the Mispanim felt very bad for him. They felt very bad. Look, he didn't look quite the same, and he had lost a lot of his energetic, and he had lost a lot of his. So they said to make him feel a bit more at home and to make him feel a little bit more at ease, so they're going to bring a bit of Frankfurt am Main into the shul. And in honor of Moreno Rosenheim, who was a prominent leader, they changed the tune of Motzei Shabbos, and they brought that along to make him feel. And I think it's very nice. So that's the story. That whilst on the whole, they would of course never change a minhag, and never at all, never think and consider even changing a tune of a minhag. But in one particular instance, they did in order to make somebody feel more at home and more comfortable in their shul. I thought it's a very, very beautiful story. I heard this from my shul last night. Yeah. Okay. So it looks like even however rigid a person is and however strict a person is, but at times when it comes to making somebody else comfortable, there's room for. Yeah. Okay. Pardon? Even a yekke. Yeah. Yeah, okay. Rabbi said, we'll be learning a little bit more about Hilchos Kriyas Shema. And more specifically, we'll be learning about the Ovel Bar Minon. We'll be learning about somebody who is an Ovel, the halachas of somebody is an Ovel if he says Kriyas Shema or not, or Sif Aleph, and it says that Simon Ein Aleph, Sif Aleph. A bit more about this now in Sif Beis, which is top of page 210. Halachas as follows, gentlemen. So the main concept that we discussed is an oinin, really. Somebody who is very close relatives were. What's the expression? Next of kin? Is that next what it is? What does kin mean? Kin is family?
Yes.
What does next of kin mean?
Kinsman.
Is that old English form?
Kinsman.
Yeah, so next of kin means.
Who's
yeah, I know the expression. I just want to understand what the next of kin.
Is Mrs. Packer's relative.
Oh, I see. Okay, that's okay. So.
After that, it's children, and after that, it's parents, and after that, it's siblings.
Yeah, very similar to that. The Shiva Kovim, indeed. Just inheritance laws. Yeah. Okay, so the halacha is that somebody who is the closest relative to somebody who's named the closest relative. He is responsible for the kvur, and therefore he is exempt from all the mitzvahs. Why is he exempt? Because he has to busy himself with the burial of that close relative. That's what he's busy. So in a way, it's very similar. It's very closely linked to oisik b'mitzvah potem la mitzvah, and he is obligated to see to the kvur ASAP of this close relative. Very good. So we're going to be looking at that shortly. In principle, the halacha goes that he's not really. Yeah, I mean, obviously, when it's a bottom mitzvah, and he's probably. We learned that there's not an extra element over here. You're right. There's an extra element over here, which we mentioned as well on Thursday, that it's even a little bit disrespectful. Even he's able to do both. Even if he's able to do both, he's able to see to the kvura and also say Shema. He shouldn't really do so because it's a bit disrespectful to the mace. You know, I'm going to quickly chapa and Shema. So it's not right. For the honor of the mace, he should not say Shema. See, base, top of page 210 in the Dishu Mishnah Bus. Now, boys, if you don't have one, still grab as long as there's only a couple left. So grab one. They are free. What's that? Not yet. Yeah. That's from the shipment, yeah. So, b'medvorim amurim, this, when do we say this? B'chol, it's on weekdays. Avol, but, b'shabbos, with regards to Shabbos, the halacha is a bit different. Chayev kol hayom, he's obligated on Shabbos to say Shema. Why so? Exactly, because you can't busy yourself with kvura. You can't busy yourself with kvura on Shabbos. There's no burials. So, therefore, since there is no burials, so he has to say Shema. Kol hayom ado ev until evening. Imach shich alat chom nisasik betzoki kvura. You know what he says? Even if you're busy going to the edge of the tchum, because you want to go as soon as possible, you want to leave the tchum to go to the burial. So I'll say, normally you're not allowed to do that. Right? People who are walking all the way till Heathrow Airport to catch a Motzei Shabbos flight, allowed or not allowed? Are you allowed to walk to Luton Airport?
No. Can't go to the tchum.
Yeah, very good. And if it's within the tchum, city airport, are you allowed to walk to city airport to catch a flight straight after?
Preparation,
absolutely. So in principle, of course, normally you wouldn't be allowed to do that. It's also, midrabon, it's rabbinically forbidden to prepare on Shabbos something for Matzah Shabbos. This kula, however, in this particular instance, of somebody lost his close relative, we are mekel. It's an exceptional circumstances of being obligated to see the kvur of a close relative. Chachomim were matter the hachona aspect, and a person would be allowed to walk all the way to gain time for the kvur. On Friday.
Yeah, because if it was on Shabbos, then he wouldn't begin.
Correct. This is all true, yeah. Avalimeinu machshech ala tchum chayev gam leis erev. V'yom tosheni. Now we're going to be looking a little bit at Yom Tosheni, although this...
Does Shabbos take away all his aninas?
No.
Just takes away the aninas from Krishna.
Yeah, so what the Mishnah is going to tell us, without going into great details, the Mishnah is going to differentiate between the halachos of Elis which are public and which are private. Everything which is public is removed. So he is allowed to even go to shul. He's allowed to everything. However, when it comes to the halachos of private things, such as learning is considered then these things don't should but sin still apply.
So you can't make a bracha.
Yeah, correct. Yeah.
You
would, yeah. Yeah, so yeah. Yeah. So I suppose, yeah, but he would be able to listen, for instance, to Kiras HaTorah.
Yeah, he can
daven
that in Shul.
No, he wouldn't be able to daven. I'm not sure, actually. Would he be able to daven? Yeah, I don't know, actually, about davening. I think some part...
You mean you should go to Shul to hear Kiras HaTorah?
I suppose I'm not sure about davening actually. Let's just see about Yom Tov. The Yom Tov Sheni, second Yom Tov is like a weekday. Although these halachas are discussed in greater details later in Siman Tov Kuf Mem Ches. The Yom Tov Rishon on first Yom Tov. So there's a difference between first and second Yom Tov. When he goes to Yom Tov Rishon, he wrote to the Kavoy Boy B'Yom on the day of the Kachov and the Kachol. He wants to bury through a goy on first day is allowed to. If he doesn't want to, so the halacha is you have to tell me what the practice is now. This, I think I've asked you. I know for a fact I've asked you. We learned Tov Kuf Mem Ches. I don't know what you answered. What the current practice is in your establishment, but what the halacha is that on first day, if there's a first day Yom Tov, how did it? The first Yom Tov nothing, and on second day
nothing. Some Be'el
Sotis
do.
Some Be'el Sotis do right. They do, right. Because on second day Yom Tov, really, you're allowed to do Kvura on the second day through Goyim. Which is interesting. Yeah? It's a double Drabonon. It's a double Drabonon, and there's an Issa Deraisa of leaving a mace, especially for such an extended time, to leave him unburied. So therefore, there is... So
it sounds like it's up to him.
It does a bit, yeah. If it's possible and feasible, kind of. That's what he means. Now the Shulchan Aruch continues in Siv Gimel. Meshamer is ameis. Somebody who is so. What about the meshamer is ameis? Somebody who does shmira, the guarding of the meis. Imroitzel lekavoy boi beyoyim. Excuse me. Afilu einu meis. So even if it's not his closest relative, potu is potu. So now there's a loch of shmira. Of guarding the mace. Why is the halach of Shmira of guarding the mace?
Mice.
Yes, it's primarily because of Achborim, but it's also an element of?
Covet.
Of covet, yeah. So what if somebody does Shmira? So often it's not the family themselves. Sometimes it is family, sometimes it's not family, to guard the mace.
I thought it was because also they could be a mix-up.
That as well, I suppose it's a practical aspect as well. But it primarily, the Gemara says already, it's because of Shmira and Achborim. So what happens if a person is guarding the mace? Is he exempt from saying Shemaya? So no, the answer is yes, he's exempt from Shemaya. By the way, somebody pointed out to me, I think it's very interesting. I think it's really interesting. Do you know that the queen, when the queen passed away, how long ago was it?
Feels like years ago.
Yeah, a few weeks ago. So it took weeks until she was buried. That's assuming she was in that coffin, which we know. Well, it took a long time. No, a week?
About 5 days,
okay. Assuming she was in that coffin that was driven around the country, right? Assuming she was in there. That's all, you know, based on assumptions. Nobody checked, right? But let's just say she was in there. So there was, during those, how long did you say, 5 days?
I think it was 11.
11, okay, well, however long it was, she was constantly being guarded. So I don't know where the honor of guarding the queen when she was, left overnight. How do you call that? When she left?
You couldn't have just left her. Someone might have taken her as, you know, the seller as a memento, to Japanese tourists or something.
Yeah. So she was definitely guarded, on a constant guard. And there was part of that, of course, was, yeah, you're right, because it was practical reasons as well. Who knows what they could have done. But there's another reason for that as well. Just simply because of? Of course, the covert. And I don't know who were these guards. And I don't know if this was, pardon?
It's the family, it's the children.
Was it the children that stayed overnight?
I don't know about that.
I doubt it.
I don't think so.
Yeah, but the point being, the point which I was...
They did a shift.
Very interesting. So the point which somebody raised to me, and I think it's a very nice point, is that, you see, that's what they do by the queen. By the queen, they understand there is that aspect and that element of guarding the queen's body until burial. They understand that. And that they do by the queen. But by us, every yid has got the halacha of shmir, of guarding. Because we're all bnei melachim. We're all bnei melachim. We all understand that. So that concept is not something which is foreign and alien on the contrary. They have that very concept when it comes to royals. Well, by us, we have that identical concept to every single yid who is nifta. How beautiful. And how correct. True or not true? Yeah? Yes?
What about, we had this problem with my late mother. So if you're nifta in a hospital, and this was like midnight, they take the body, the mace, to a chapel. So my brother had to bring up his rod about it because, you know, you can't go into a chapel, but they take it into...
So I'm sure that happens every day. You know what you do?
Mortuary. If it's not a chapel, I think they take it into a mortuary.
And mortuary, is that in any way religiously...
But they wouldn't allow anybody to go in there.
Oh, I see. Yeah, is that current practice?
They have a waiting room joined onto the mortuary, separate two rooms together.
Uh-huh.
They would allow us to go.
That's interesting, because if it's let's think about it. So you mentioned the three reasons why we do Shmira. So the reason of mix-up... You are probably helping that concept, assuming there's no other door. So I suppose there's not. You're just. And then the second reason, which was mentioned, was the covert. I suppose, I don't know. Are you fulfilling the concept of covert by standing outside the door? I would argue you would. But primarily, the concept is the first and main concept is achborim. They're protected from mice or not?
They don't really have it.
Then. Yeah,
I don't.
Yeah.
Have a tote.
But it's not, really, right? Yeah. So I'd argue that probably achborim. I don't know if achborim is being. I suppose nowadays there's less of a concern. I imagine there's less of a concern, although I don't know. But it's probably less of a concern. But pardon?
The bodies are refrigerated.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So that sentence. But Rabbi says somebody does shmira is exempt from reciting Kriyas Shema. Pardon? Yeah, so it's a very good question because look, if Siv Dalet is going to raise your point, Siv Dalet says, "Mama's your point." Hayu Shnayim Mesham. What if there's two people serving? If there's two people guarding, Hayu Shnayim. If there are two Meshamim, then Zeh Meshamah veZeh Koyre. Then the Alochi is one says Shmira, and the other one goes out and he says Shema, and the Vachkach and afterwards Meshamah Zeh veKoyre Zeh. They change. So they interchange. So does that answer your question? Right. So that's a very good question. I do not know. Jonathan asked a very valid question. He says, "Well, we're understanding that if you can do both, you should do both, right? So if there's two people who are guarding, so one goes out, says Shema, the other one, whilst the other one does Shmira. But Jonathan asks, well, one second, what if there's one person? Why can't he quickly go out? You know." Quickly go out and say Shema and come back.
Maybe his mamash not allowed to take the
fast. Very good. So I want to just point out, are you allowed to say Shema in front? Are you allowed to say Shema by the mace?
No.
No, why not?
Loig
L'Rosh. So that's the rule of Loig L'Rosh. You're not allowed to do any mitzvahs right bifnei, right in front of the mace. Because it's like rubbing it in. Look, you can't do any mitzvahs anymore, and I can, you know. So it's like rubbing it in. He's nifter nevach, and he can't do any mitzvahs. So therefore, that's the rule why we don't put our tzitzis out, and we don't tefillin, etc. We're not allowed to. So similarly, also we're not allowed to say Shema, which is a mitzvah, in front of a mace. So therefore, I suppose the answer to your very interesting question is: I suggest, I'm not convinced, but I suggest the answer is because. So again, you can't say Shema right in front. You can't go out to say Shema. Then you're not doing Shmira properly, right? The Shmira is really, you know, a very practical, you know, achborim and the covert. It's if you're going out of the room, you're not doing your job properly. What about the grave digger himself? Potter is exempt. There's a halacha when he's not allowed to, when he's not really. I saw this today actually. When he's not really allowed to prepare graves, is that what? So you're not allowed to. So for specifics. So you know you're not allowed to prepare a grave. I mean, I don't know if it's not allowed to. The meaning is not to prepare. And if somebody buys a plot, so one doesn't prepare it in advance. Is that exactly? Yeah. So therefore, it happens when somebody's nifted in a choifer. They are digging now. Choifer cable amaze. So somebody's digging. He's digging. Literally digging. Potter is exempt from Shema. Why is he exempt? Yeah, of course. Now, what about if when he's resting for a few minutes? You can't dig constantly. It's very hard physical labor. So what if he takes a 5 minutes break? Is he then obligated to say Shema or not? The grave digger, taking a rest. Probably going, no, nowadays, yeah. So they don't have to say Shema. What? If you can have any shot. Mishnah Berurah is very lenient here. Mishnah Berurah says, that's interesting what you were saying. No, Mishnah Berurah mentioned something else. Mishnah Berurah says, Potter in Tzivkot Yud Gimel, even if he rests for a few minutes, he is exempt. Why? Shegam oz niko adayin oisig b'mitzvah. He's still considered oisig b'mitzvah. Shalidei zeh, through this, yischazek koichoi. His koich comes back. Ve'lach zoe, to continue lachpo into the day. So, resting is a mitzvah. If you ever needed a proof, here is the evidence. Resting is a proof. He is oisig b'mitzvah, not only when he's actually digging, and thereby exempt from Shema, but even when he's resting a few minutes to get his koiches back, to have a few minutes break, maybe having a snack, maybe having drinking something. So if he's having a few minutes break, that's considered oisig b'mitzvah. Potunetzvah is considered, by resting. Why? Because that gives him koich. I was always wondering, what's Pshat, you know, when you drive, and my wife always points out, when you're driving, there's always these, the road works, and it's like loads, all the roads are, you know, instead of four lanes, there's only one lane, and the traffic lights, you must be seeing this the whole time, and the road works, it's not moving, and you look, you actually see the works, but they're not actually doing anything. It's hard to spot them actually doing something, right? And I was always wondering what's Pshat in it, but now we see that what's Pshat, this is Oisik Ba-Mitzvah, because resting is a mitzvah in its own right. So that's what's Pshat, it's Oisik Ba-Mitzvah. Rabbi said, so to summarize, we learned this evening, we discussed that there is certainly an exemption of saying Shema for the Oinein. We spoke about this kula, that an Oinein is allowed to go out of the Tchum. It's good to prepare, not to go out of Tchum, but to prepare for the kvur taking place afterwards. We spoke about Yom Tov Sheni and Yom Tov Rishon. Yom Tov Sheni has a kula that through goyim one is out to bury on the second day Yom Tov. And we spoke about Shmira of the Mace and his potter from saying Shema. We said if there's two, then they're allowed to interchange, and thereby they can say Shema. We also spoke about the grave digger is also obligated. He's also exempt to say Shema, even b'shas nuchoy. Okay, that's it for this evening, Rabbi Yisayim. Okay. No, they can't. Yeah, Amir Nochi. Yeah.